are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Dwayne.
Hello.
It's Niall.
Oh, Bersona.
And it's me, Brian. And on this week, we are covering the anime that aired between Monday, the 18th of June, and Sunday, the 24th of June, 2018. And we start with Golden Kamuy, Episode 11. Everybody, get together. It's a murder hotel.
Ooh. Don't you wish it was somewhere nice and cold like that, huh? Mm.
not like this hotel, though. I told you it wouldn't be a mystery, because I'd seen who the this convict was based on.
I mean, like, it had the, you know, had a murder hotel, it had a bunch of secret passageways and all that kind of stuff that you could do a mystery in, but with the fucking show that it is and the characters that we have, it's just like, yeah, this isn't going to fly.
So this is a hotel full of death traps. What's the convict's name?
I've forgotten both of the names, the pseudonym and the actual name.
Ushiyama is a big guy, we know him.
But the proprietress, as the one that Ushiyama falls in love with.
They are...
Iyanaga.
Okay.
That's the name they're using. Iyanaga Kano.
Wait, do they actually use another name?
No, I don't think we don't get the name of what they were called in prison.
Okay, for some reason I thought we did, but I guess it was just like he kept saying, not hostess, did he?
Proprietress.
Proprietress, that was it, yeah.
An unwieldy word, but I just go for accuracy.
The wiki it does say their true name, but I don't think it got mentioned in this. I think they just refer to them as the doctor who believed that by eating various body parts they could maintain their youth.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'd say one thing for the methods, but it seems to be working. Based off the flashback and this kind of the wrinkled guy, and it's like, well, look, he's still got the same mole.
Yes, it's like, I'm not sure where the line draws between artistic licensing does this fantasy science that they believe in actually be true, or is this just because Sugimoto then just completely insults their idea?
Yeah, but I mean, again, the concept of Sugimoto is I will not die by rushing headlong into death. That's his entire fucking dealio. I mean, it's a very questionable show in many regards.
He does a very, very convincing illusion with skillful costuming and makeup.
Yes, it could well just be that.
Maybe prison's really rough. I mean, like, that seems to be the way of it.
Paul's Drag Race to know they can pull off some amazing things in that arena, so it's probably something in that vein.
Mm.
But the best the best part of it. The best part of it is the guys who don't know Ushiyama hanging out with Ushiyama, palling around with Ushiyama, getting on with him.
the dick lecture. That was fucking great. That was like my favorite. I mean, there was loads of great scenes in this episode, but that was probably my favorite one. His dick lecture is over. Thank you, Sensei.
Thank you, Sensei.
shit.
When she's trying to pull the lump off his head.
Yeah, he's just like, it's not going to come off. He's a nice guy. Like, he goes to wrestle your man, our boy, but he realizes, like, okay, if we keep going, we'll kill each other. So let's not do it now. So you know that's like a setup later, so they'll wrestle, which they do in much more explosive effect.
Yeah, I thought this was a much better episode, looking episode, than some of the more recent ones.
Yeah, I wonder if it's like, because I imagine it was a couple of chapters anyway, but because it's condensed into one episode, it always feels like there's plenty going on, you know, that kind of way?
Yes.
But the other ones might have been drawn out a little.
That fight is really dynamic, and some of some of those shots, like there's a shot of Ushiyama sticking his head through the hole in the wall, which I really liked.
They can animate fire when they want to. They just choose that.
I mean, this is the right time to do it, I guess.
We also discover, what's the quote-unquote uncle? His name?
Rannoch.
I've forgotten his name as well.
Ranka. Oh, God.
Yeah.
It's a really, again, unwieldy name to say.
We learn that he can sleep through a hell of a lot. I know he's partly
gassed. He's a heavy sleeper. Like, but, someone lands on him, he's just like, oof, while still asleep.
It's like, oh, yes, he was gassed, but also Sugimoto was gassed. He managed to wake up.
But he's crazy.
Yeah, I think the other guy might be crazy as well, based on his leaping in to fight a giant
fish. Yeah, I guess they're all different kinds of crazy. Yes. But
So basically, Ianaga is, like, first of all, distraught that Uchiyama is here, because they think they're going to be found out.
But also wants to eat that guy?
Yes, but also then decides, oh, well, if he's here, I might as well eat him. And then immediately also distressed that Shirayashi shows up.
And it's such a great contrast, because obviously he's what's the big guy again? Sorry.
Uchiyama.
Uchiyama is kind of like, let's fuck. And she's like, later, my pet. Shirayashi kind of coming in the door is like, my darling. And it's like, let's go out together. I'll be a gentle lover. It's like, everyone wants a piece of this. And he's like, no, not you guys. Oh, fuck. My careful planned murder hotel. Yes.
Well, the best bit is where they're wishing that Shirayashi would turn around to notice that Uchiyama's about to find him, and then they just decide, oh, I'm just going to have to kill him.
It was just more like, oh, like, we know Uchiyama and Shirayashi know each other. And it's like, the guy says, he goes in one door and the other guy goes out the other. I was like, oh, they're constantly missing each other. Whoa.
And even when he gets slammed behind the door at one stage, he kind of just goes like, I'm just going to check into this room. Because why would you go after the thing that slammed you into a wall?
But then later on, where Uchiyama finds the trapdoor and then just jumps down it.
Yeah, again, it's a great contrast between them and how they're handling this murder hotel.
Because he's
producing matchsticks from his gut as he... everything stored in there, I guess.
Uchiyama is very drunk, though, at this point, as we know by the fact that he almost gave away his part of his plot. Yes.
Well, yeah, and he's trying to bury himself in the breasts of a guy he knows.
Yeah, but it does not matter. He's just attracted.
It doesn't matter to him. It's just he's not attracted to that guy.
Yes.
Is what's important. It's like, oh, that guy, he's gross.
And everything, they buy a load of weapons at the start, and Shirayashi ends up just using all of the explosives, some intentionally.
And the bag falls down into the fire, yes. And it's like, oh no, my bag of bombs.
He was sick, was like, oh, I got my bombs, I'm finally a working part of the team now, outside of breaking into stuff. It's like, no, my bombs, the fella. You see, he's more distraught that they lost them than the blast is going to level the hotel.
So my
new thing.
They think Uchiyama's dead at the end, and Usurper thinks that a fish cake is all that remains of him.
Oh, dear.
So they've got to go and find a way to earn more money to buy more explosives. And then after all this is settled, we go and find the town where apparently Hijikata's group have been getting involved with warring factions. And we see in the barber shop there, here's Ogata. Getting a shave, wondering where he's going to ally himself next.
I forgot all about that bit. I watched it so long ago.
Yeah, then there's a lot going on in this episode, so...
Yes. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. I said that the fight between Sugimoto and Uchiyama was excellent, because I thought it really used the surroundings well.
What, just slamming each other into
everything? Yeah, it was just the way Uchiyama... you think that Sugimoto's got him, but then Yoshiyama will use like the wall to pull himself away or push himself back from a throw.
And I mean, like, they bust through like so many walls. I love the guy like just getting changed to go to bed, and like two burly dudes just burst through the wall. Oh dear.
That fight in Terminator 2.
Yeah. The bystanders.
Yeah. Presumably that other person staying in the hotel was perfectly safe because they had no body parts that Ian Arga was interested in.
Well, the hotel exploded, so no, they weren't safe.
He was safe at that point.
I mean, like, he might have got the fuck out of there. He might have went to see the manager and, you know, been able to escape the hotel fire and then explosion. Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, the reason I know what was happening because I'd seen that the character is based on H.H. Holmes.
Hmm.
Are you familiar with H.H. Holmes?
Memory. I know, but tell the way.
Yeah.
He was a guy who built a murderer hotel in America during...
Was this the one that was actually a murderer hotel, or was it one that was made to look like one?
No, it was one which was literally a murder hotel. It was literally a hotel designed to enable him to murder people during the World's Fair.
And, you know, hiding on the wall, looking through paintings like, or whatever. The standard shit, yeah.
Well, yeah, I think also, like, tubs of acid and things going on.
You gotta get some acid there. All the classics.
Yeah, so once I'd read that, I was like, oh yeah, I guess I know what's coming given the name of this episode.
Yeah, and again, it's just these characters are so unsuited to that kind of premise. Like, at one stage, our murderess is going to try and eat Asurapa's eyes. And Sugimoto's kind of kicking her off and is like, hey, why are you licking her eyes, you weirdo? It's like, oh, how am I going to explain how to licking this person's eyes? I've got it. It's the perfect cover. It's not. You can't explain that away.
No, because Sugimoto is especially paranoid. And so their story did not work
anyone.
On
yeah. And if you're going to start licking people's eyeballs, that's going to make you look bad.
But that's a great trick. I need to remember to do that next time I play D&D and stay in an inn.
What, lick someone's eyes?
No, wedge the door shut with your sword.
Oh yeah, so how did you get in here, that kind of thing.
Yeah, because even if someone gets in, they're going to hear the sword clattering to the ground.
You better have like two swords, I think is probably the best way.
Well, most of my D&D characters tend to have a lot of swords.
Okay.
To the point where sometimes they really needed a caddy.
Let's roll them into a crossbow and fire them.
After you get to a certain level in D&D, you start acquiring swords with like bonuses against specific types of creatures. So then you have to pull out the best tool for the job.
The first time we did it, we just like robbed everything that wasn't nailed down. So we would like have spare goblin swords that we'd throw into traps just to see. Instead of rocks, it was just like, we just have a big bag of swords. It's fine.
This also reminded me a lot of our D&D and other role-playing games in that it involved a inn being set on fire and exploding by the end of it.
A good setup.
Yeah, it was a lot of burning down of inns in fantasy stuff, but Call of Cthulhu, you'd be surprised how many hotels and inns get exploded.
Well, there's a lot of weird stuff going on there, and you got to stay the night there because you're not familiar with the place, and Eldritch Explosion, why not?
Yeah, exactly. You run into enough terrible monsters, you decide we can't fight these with guns or conventional weapons. We're just going to have to go and get explosives. The only way we stand a chance. And of course, then they end up blowing themselves up. Okay, next up we've got Magical Girl Aure, episode 12. I do believe this was called Finale. Let me just double check. I'll check the cue. This wrapped everything up. It was
like not even for like a sequel or anything?
No sequel. Because it was only a 12-chapter comic in the first place.
Okay.
So they already got more material out of it than you'd have expected, I think. So the problem is... Oh, it was Magical Girl Watashi, was what it was called. Finale was last week's. No, final battle was last week's. So the manager wants to be defeated, but Saki basically refuses to, instead starts smashing up his set and destroying his cameras. So then he starts torturing the male idol in an attempt to convince her to beat him up. She still won't do it, so he tries to commit suicide by dropping a stalactite on his head, but then your lad, who's tied up, saves him. Mihiro, that's your boy. Basically drags the manager out of the path of the stalactite with the same rope that he's tied up with. Then all the fairies show up. There's the one we've seen before, there's Hioe, there's Kokoro, and then there's a bunch of other guys who look like other types of Yakuza. They've come to arrest the manager for invading Earth. You're not allowed to invade other planets. So they tie him up, but then the demons start going berserk. So apparently the problem with the demons has been that the magical girls kill them off too quickly. And so while they can regenerate, every time they regenerate, there's like bad data from their previous iteration. And so it's come to that they've only got one thing on their mind, and that's defeating magical girls. So then they all start piling in. It's 300 demons versus 13 people on 13 fairies, Hioe, and two magical girls. Oh, one magical girl at this point, because the other one's already been defeated. So they start getting overrun with all these demons. And it like plays out to begin with a bit like a Yakuza movie, or like a trailer for a Yakuza movie. They get overwhelmed, but then the other two magical girls show up, the Prisma ones, with Sakio, who they've rescued. They join in, they get everyone beaten up. Everything comes to a head. The manager starts to help. They let the manager free to help get them to help him to help as well. But then he's got to go. He's got to go and be punished for his crimes. But before he goes, he finally gets a handshake with the two magical girls. He's like, "Can I have my own handshake, like a fan's handshake, where the idol puts two hands around the one hand?" And they drag him off, and they decide, "No, we don't have a manager. We're going to do this properly. We won't use our magical girldom to push us to our heights of idol careers. We're going to start from scratch again as normal idols, but with a fairy as our manager now." And they still have to do magical girl shit as well, because we see them doing another concert in the shopping mall, and then they get called away because, once again, Mohiro is being beaten up. Apparently the only crimes in this town are Mohiro being beaten up, whether it's by demons or just common thugs. To the point where Kokoro goes, "Well, he must have just been born under... really think he might have been born under a bad star at this point, because he's got terrible luck." Then we see Prisma wondering whatever happened to the magical girls, and one of them suddenly dawns on her that, oh, maybe they were actually girls, they weren't men, just like we are. And that pretty much just all wraps itself up nicely. Just they go off into the sunset to beat up some thugs. It was nicely. I don't know how much that ending mirrors the ending of Creamy Mammy, whether she decides she's going to push on her career and not use the magical powers at the end. I suspect it might be quite similar, because I get the feeling this is just like a big homage to Studio Piero Magical Girl shows, which I guess this is also one. Also, everyone gets turned back to relatively good animation again. That was wrapped up from the previous episode. But yeah, as a Studio Piero comedy show, it was a pretty good one. It was not Mr. Osomatsu levels all the time, but occasionally reaches ridiculous heights. So, I definitely recommend checking it out. Talking of ridiculous comedy heights, Space Battleship Tiramisu, episode 12, Man's World. which I think has a joke I've seen before, but I don't care because it's a great joke of somebody driving a mecha which has drills for hands and being told to pick up a weapon.
Isn't that specific joke before?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I've seen that specific joke before.
Okay.
Not the then just drilling the drills into the weapon to pick it up.
I thought that was pretty badass.
but yeah, I'm pretty sure I've seen somebody driving a mecha with drills for hands and then realizing they can't pick anything up. What in? I don't know. Maybe Haybot. Might be something else. So, in this, the first half is Subaru. He thinks back to his childhood as his mechas begin to fall apart. And then we see what terrible children both him and his brother were. As the pair of them almost kill their father twice.
His older brother's like more like a neat freak. He's just like a little shit of a kid. He's, he nearly gets his brother and his dad killed.
Yes.
And it's kind of like, mechas are cool. It's like, you little bastard.
He sticks a sticker on the screen of the mecha.
Just because it wasn't turned on.
I just feel like whoever does this comic either has a child or a little brother who did this at some point. Or maybe they did it at some point when they were younger. It feels like something which has definitely happened.
Touchscreen, if it's a more modern thing, you've had kids stick the stuff onto your tablet and you try and peel it off and just the animation's worse than it's like, I'm fucking ordering like another Tesco delivery. Shit, stop it. No.
Yeah, I know because my mate runs he's got a Mac dealership, and I know he occasionally had to repair Macintoshes, which children had got to. Like, deciding, how many CDs can I get into the iMac CD drive? I think was the one which stuck in my mind. These are horrible children. And they also, didn't we like see them as like... Like, we were, like, given the impression that they were orphans or something, or they didn't celebrate Christmas, or...
Like, that their house was exploded.
I get the feeling their dad's
see the mother's face, that kind of way?
Yeah, I feel like their dad's not that great either, that he, like, spent all his time designing this robot rather than being a proper dad to them.
So, is it the mother got killed by aliens? But the dad is still around or something?
That was the other thing I was wondering. I was wondering if the dad's still around.
Because you're the mechanic, the motherly mechanic one was saying, is like, I'll have to get onto the designer, that kind of way. And that puts him on that whole thinking about his... The designer, you mean my father, you know, kind of flashback.
Yeah, it does feel like the thing we're suspecting that this mecha battle
is... this war is total bullshit.
Yeah, it's happening a tiny cross-section of the galaxy.
Like, I imagine it's just like two ships, you know? Because the rest of it's police and other mecha pilots walking their dogs and that kind of shit. It's just, it's perfectly normal, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, and then the fact that it's both the sons of the mecha designer on each side.
Are very important to both sides, yeah.
Yeah. Then the black mecha shows up and he can't take his mecha out, so he's got to use one which is in storage, and he's absolutely disgusted by the state of the cockpit.
Well, I mean, like, everything's wrong about it, yeah.
Let's say you wouldn't enter the cockpit because it's just like a clear glass dome. Like, everybody can see me. I have no privacy in this thing. Oh,
I did like your one sentence. Like, don't worry, it's the same kind of glass they use for helicopters. And I was like, it's a spaceship. That's not good enough. Shit. But yeah, no, it was just super grody in there as well. I guess it was a working man's thing. Didn't it have like a dream catcher in the front of it?
Yes.
And the clear glass dome or something.
But I think the idea is that this would be what his cockpit would end up looking like if no one cleaned up after him, if he left his cockpit for a while, because he's done plenty of disgusting things in his own cockpit.
I guess that's true, yeah.
So clearly,
he's been
nude
several times, yeah.
This was clearly somebody else's sanctuary in the same way his is.
Must have been quite open about who they were as a person, because there's no hiding in there.
No, exactly. Yeah, and so he's got to back Vulgar up, but yeah, he can't. Because this mecha only has drills for hands, so he can't fire this cannon. Well, he could, he just then couldn't aim properly because the aiming device stunk so much.
Yeah, it like had like a mouldy bit of sandwich on it or something. I forget exactly.
It was a bunch of food which sitting on a leaf attached to this.
It's like, yeah, so the guy was obviously balancing his dinner on it or whatever while he was shooting.
Yeah. It was a pretty good job of making the cockpit look as disgusting as possible. Like both the colours and the sounds and the sliminess of the grips and things.
Yeah.
So yes, Vulgar had to be saved by, is it Ligier, the other pilot?
Yeah, the female pilot.
The only other named pilot, yeah.
Yeah, the daughter of the captain. That was it. I don't know whether it's the last episode next week or whether it's continuing.
I feel like there was another one up already.
Yeah, there's another one up already, but I don't know whether.
There'll be one more and then it's coming back in October.
That's it, yes. It's another one of these back in Octobers. dear me. Just as I was trying to cut down. Well, I'll be able to cut down, I'm pretty sure, in the summer, but all these things return in October. Going to cause me trouble. Then we got Lupin the Third, Part 5, Episode 12, The Extravagance of Goemon Ishikawa the 13th. This was a lot better than last week's. I really liked it, both the story and the look of the episode.
I just get the only uncomfortable bit for me was just that, like, Goemon, you've just been played, man. you're just being a stupid tourist here. You can't everyone the Euros, man.
It was once the
my guy. Mom says you gotta pay this much for Euros. Like, yeah, right.
That kid is running the place. I know. We've never seen the mother. The kid is running some kind of scam.
But no, it's when the security guy who he's going to team up with then charges him to team up with him.
Was that the security guy, though? Because I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I was trying to figure out at what point did they do the switch. But, and I mean, that seems like a Lupin thing. You know, just really rub it in to his supposed friend.
So Lupin sent Goemon off to what's he trying to steal off?
A locket with a huge Romanov diamond in it or something.
Yeah,
it belonged to the Russian royal family. Got lost in the revolution, and now it's passed down to this lady who we're trying to find.
It's in one of three places, and so they gotta split it up. And himself and the other two guys are just like laughing at Goemon the whole time because it's like, hey, you gotta seduce the lady.
I gotta go because I gotta go to Sicily and Jigga's gotta go to Geneva. So, you know, we gotta split up and we'll put you here in this town where there's an anime convention. Oh, I mean, there's not an anime convention now.
He's been played by his friends, not to mention all the fucking the tourist traps, yeah.
Yeah, and then he says, oh no, it's definitely not for a woman. And then later on, he rings Lupin, and there he's giggling away with a woman. And he's like, this is for a woman, isn't it?
Well, I mean, the woman specifically takes the phone off.
Yes.
And he goes, like, hey, get me that thing, Goemon, you can do it. And he's like, son of a bitch.
Yeah, but the problem is the woman who's got. Everyone seems to be after this. What is it, Chloe, the name? Yeah. But the Chloe who's being harassed by various thugs doesn't seem to be the Chloe they're looking for.
Yeah, it's a person with the same name, but not the. Again, it makes it kind of seem like she's a decoy or that they've been misinformed somewhere along the line.
Yes. And of course, there's the. Normal, awkward romance between a woman and Goemon.
Again, all the awkwardness is on his side, obviously. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. So where does Lupin show up at this point? He's in the second half.
Something to take that disguised as Bruno, because after Goldmine 7 dinner with Chloe and the young lad, and it's like, oh, this wine is really going to my head. Where's it from? Sicily.
Yeah, and she specifically said she locally sourced all her stuff. It's like, wait a minute, that's not here. Oh, I got it off that guy, that trustworthy guy. Remember the one who took all your dosh?
Follow this up. So I'm gonna just come in and just backseat drive it and steal the jewel from you.
Because you know Goemon would be all honorable and not steal off. Yeah, yeah.
And then Goemon ends up paying Bruno to get Lupin.
And I love that Bruno was like, "You want him dead or alive?" It's like, I don't fucking care. dear.
Yes, I couldn't quite tell whether this is because he's in the red jacket, so I assume it's supposed to be taking place earlier than the blue jacket one, but it feels like it could easily fit in along with the blue jacket one due to the French location.
I'm beginning to think that all Lupin takes place at now, whenever now is,
yes.
And the tone is determined by what jacket he's wearing.
Yeah,
I think the universe. Much of a dick in the blue jacket one, so he said, oh, let's call it a red one, and it's just that day of the week when he feels like messing with people.
Yeah,
so this is the one, this was the episode by one of the main guys who've written Final Fantasy stuff.
I think I did see some Final Fantasy guys in the cosplay.
We're doing the whole, oh, stop us and see if we can pick out the fingers in there. But some of them are just too general.
But I'm pretty sure I saw like a Advent Children Cloud in there somewhere.
Yeah, Kazushige Nojima is your fella. Which ones did he do?
This stuff, does he mean it games or those fucking tie-in things for
15?
Bits of both. Final Fantasy 7, 8, 10, X2, Advent Children, Crisis Core, Kingdom Hearts games. Last Order. And something called Buso Chugakuse Basket Army. I have no idea what that is.
Basket.
Armed Middle School Student Basket Army. I'm guessing that isn't Final Fantasy related. But I think that's the only other like non-video game anime thing he's written for. We should do more, because this was good.
He's fine. Get away from that.
Certainly better than Advent Children was. and then is it Gohan's? Seems to be returning in next week's episode, I think. Except not next week.
Because
I don't think there is an episode this week. As we're
recording. Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, but we get Amy back. And a princess, apparently.
Yeah, she used to be a bit bow and arrow.
Yes.
Crazy.
Oh, yes.
When I saw the bow and arrow and she has the cook pot going, I thought, did I just put a surfer in Lupin suddenly?
yes, because the preview was all about Lupin infiltrating this all-girls private school.
Yeah.
And it's like the blooming fast show. Is it the 13th Earl, that character? It's like somebody going into a place he desperately should not be allowed into.
He's sounding super creepy in that preview, but I'm kind of hoping it's just like, yeah, it's just him living up to his part, because yes. One back in it. It's like, no, I'm not going to try and have sex with you. That'd be weird and creepy. No. I'm just going to say that, because if I don't, people will think I'm not horny all the time.
Yeah, and then we'll also put in a cut of somebody clearly much older than any of the students in a state of undress. We won't show the face, so you won't know whether it's Fujiko or not.
I mean, like, it probably is.
It's probably Lupin, for all I know. At this point in this series. But he was a teacher as well in part four as well, didn't he?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah. Disguised as a professor.
Yeah. But yeah, they definitely played the sleaziness up in the preview. Then we've got Megalobox, episode 12, Leap Over the Edge of Death. Oh, this was good. And another song in it, another rap.
Yeah, yeah.
And kind of points to them for not doing the thing that we expect, because...
Yeah, kind of predicted, but not the way we...
No, they did it a lot better, I thought.
Yeah, yeah, no, absolutely.
Oh, no, how it's going to end, so you think, oh, okay, well, they've already made note of this possible fatal flaw in the integrated gear. That's going to be the thing, right? No, it's way better and thematically much more appropriate.
Yeah.
Yeah, I still imagine it's going to be part of the cause in the end, but yeah, no, it works a lot better, like you said.
Yeah, so rather than cutting weight, as Rikishi did...
well, he does, kind of.
Yeah, Yuri cuts weight by removing the bit of metal off his body.
Yeah, taking out that integrated gear, which everyone's like, you can't take it out, it's integrated. I can't say that word the more I think about it.
but it gives a bit of a redemption to the brother.
Yeah, he appears to have kind of like... You can kind of see he's grown a bit, yeah.
And then with the sister, we get the... She's not going to blow Joe's cover. And then we get, like, the bit where she sees Yuri boxing again without the gear. And then she gets the flashback to when she first saw him. And so you get the idea, like, oh, now she remembers what she saw in him from the very beginning again.
Because she's been kind of talking, like, I can't let you fight without the gear. It's megaloboxing. It's all about gear fighting. And this is a fucking farce. So the final is going to be, like, no gear in the gear fighting.
Yeah,
seeing him box is kind of like, oh, that's why I thought this was good.
And Yuri makes a fair point.
She has to wash her hands of it, yeah.
Well, you only held the tournament to advertise me. And you've got that. You've signed your defense contract. I've fucking had this thing put on me for you. I've been doing your thing. Let me do my thing for once.
And the contract was signed at that stage. So it's not like we're waiting until the results of the final. It's like, no. The paperwork's done. Like,
And we learned that with Etisight, Gamba's got amazing hearing now. And he brings in the guys from the army to train with Joe.
Yeah, to spar with him and to some extent, like, function as his eyes a bit, but although he's doing pretty good just hearing Joe's punches, you know?
Yes. And a great metaphor of, like, basically saying, your punch should sound like a cow farting. It doesn't but yeah, this is another great episode. It's, yeah, gets you really hyped for the end episode next week with the rap, where they're basically describing the plot so far.
What was nice about it as well is, without like going too much in depth with it, it gives Yuri, because of what he has to overcome in this episode, it gives him kind of like a not a training montage, but like that he has to break through this wall in order to get to the final, so that it's going to feel like earned for him to get there as well, which is nice that they managed to do that just in one episode.
Yeah, I think it does a pretty good job at hitting story beats in the time it's got.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't feel shortchanged.
Yeah, getting by want, I'd say, ever really. I remember if it's here, like, last one does. Why his backstory is like, you know, going back further, because anyway, he just kind of hints of it here. The guy who taught me like how to megalobox said this, like, you know, you're gonna, in your boxing career, there's gonna be one guy you gotta fight, and when you see him, when you meet them, don't let go of him. That's the guy. And of course, you regret it forever now. Like,
it makes it sound very romantic, I must say.
Yeah, but it's the length he's going to, like, no, like, that's the ideally he's held on to for who knows how many years, so enough so that he's willing to endure of after having metal ripped out of your body. Because I was saying, God, give the guy some painkillers, but then fucking Michio says, I offer them painkillers if he says, no, man, if I do that, it'll just dull the pain, it'll dull my focus. Guy is intense.
Yeah, it was kind of like, I think he wanted to do, like, in a very short time, like within a week, put his body under the same kind of hell that Joe's been doing for quite some time now, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and the look on Joe's face when he hears that Yuri's taken the gear off.
Yeah, yeah. It's just that kind of like manic excitement.
Yes, because they should like show him from the ground up to begin with, so you don't see his immediate reaction, and then then you see, like, you're like, oh, is it, what's he going to feel like? And then you don't.
Todd, oh, is he going to be disappointed there because he wanted to fight Yuri like
at his top, yeah.
The way he was from before, because no, he's like, he's come up to his level, but now, in a way, Yuri's going to come down and meet him halfway, and there'll be true equals. It'll just be about one mano a mano, no gear, no death. It's just two guys in the ring and their skills duking it out. And
well, it also shows, like, Joe, that Yuri respects him to not lower himself to his level, but it's like, I want to do the thing you did. That was fucking cool. And the fact that the guy he respects him that much is kind of like, it's going to be a good fight. It's basically that grin that he has.
Yeah, splendid stuff. I can't wait for this to get put on Blu-ray for me to buy. It's one of those shows.
Yeah, I think it's definitely going to be one of those.
It's a keeper, yeah. Oh, this would be, again, is that an easy sell to... What you like, anime do, or do you want to watch some? Here's a great one. It's great, beginning to end, looks good. It even, like, has an intentional, like, visual filter put over to it reminds you of things you might have seen when you were younger.
Unless it really drops the ball in the ending, which I really don't see it fucking doing at this stage.
They've done such a great job of Raiders updating what was already a very good sports story.
I mean, even if you didn't know the thing coming in, like the way they're booking expectations, like they left that Joe's ID card hanging, and as the thing is like, oh, that'll be how they do it. It's like, nope, they're not going to use that. It's like, well, then his gear will be the downfall. Nope, not going to use it. And it's like, oh, god damn it, Joe. It keeps setting yourself up for these things, and then it's like, oh, it did an interesting turn on that. Not like a freaking Shyamalan twist, but like a really good way of showing that. Like, it's just so confident in what it does.
I appreciate, like, it knows that you know that you might have seen Ashes Down a Door, or you've looked it up by now about the inspiration of this, and you might have guessed how that ended, or did this infamous thing happen to it, or anything like that. It knows that you know that, and you know how it's going to end, but it's going to try and judge it each way coming how they're going to do it, and that's what makes it more impressive. The fact that I know what's going to happen here, but I want to see exactly how they do it. Like, what way are they going to spin it? That's the most exciting thing. Because
Niall, have you already picked which fight you're including in Hell in the Cell?
Oh,
that's a tough one.
Or are you waiting till the end?
I'll see the end. I imagine the fucking end one is going to be killer. Like, it's quite
unless you want to leave like the end one, if it is that as good as I'm kind of expecting, hopefully not too high, if it is that good, you might want to leave that in the show. What my second favorite fight is the guy who came back in this episode, the army guy,
I think it was him.
That was a really good fight as well.
This is going to be like the final is going to be pivotal. It's going to be loaded with emotion, loaded with fucking everything. It's going to be intense, real deal stuff. So I would be kind of wanting to wreck that for anybody who's coming to the panel I seem to be trying to sell this. Maybe not show them that end, because that's just too good to give away
to give away before they've seen the build to it.
Well, unless of course somebody makes that Yuri on Ice video we were thinking of.
Oh dear.
Next up, before I forget, Disastrous Life of Psyche K, season 2, episode 23. I noticed the first half of season 2 is now up on Netflix.
Oh, okay.
For those who want to watch it via illegal means, and obviously they won't be as far as the episodes with the fast-talking character who's in all five parts of this episode, facing an unusual past. So, in this episode, previously, Psyche had been found out by Akechi, his former classmate from when they were at elementary school together. And so in this episode, he decides that he is going to try and prevent this happening by travelling back in time and undoing the events that set this in motion way back when he was in elementary school. And so the first four parts are him trying and failing repeatedly to do this.
So is it like a Groundhog Day? Like it's the same episode, but something else happens?
Not quite, because you can there has to be like a 2-hour gap between each time he goes back. So he can't keep going back to the same spot. Also because he explains if the same person meets during a time travel and they recognize each other, both recognize each other, then the one who's traveled back in time will be ejected. Which we see happen the first time around. So then he starts coming back as his female self and trying to stay far enough away that his kid self won't spot him. And so the joke is, like, you get the history, but at the same time you're getting the history, you're also getting these jokes of every time he returns back to the future, something else has gone wrong. So, like, initially, like, Akechi's got a different haircut. But then it becomes more radically, and that comes back, and it's like a Fist of the North Star type apocalypse. Then he comes back a second time after that. It's still a Fist of the North Star apocalypse, but this time he's wearing a bunch of clothes that don't make any sense. It's like his costumes from all sorts of weird genres. Then he comes back, and so the crux of the story involves that Akechi was being bullied by this kid, I think Tadashi, and we eventually learn that the explosion I mentioned in the classroom before was actually Psyche beating the bullies up after they'd knocked Akechi unconscious and written stupid on his head. And then he covered it up by wiping their memories and smashing the room up. And then he left school. Another time he comes back, and now not only is Akechi stone in his room, but also the bully's stone in his room. It's like, what's he doing here as well? Sometimes he's dead, the bully's dead. Sometimes the bully has taken the life of other characters in the show. And basically eventually runs out of time, and so all he can do is leave a porno mag outside the elementary school. It was like, that is bound to have a... that's bound to change time. Bound to have a butterfly effect. So then he comes back, and it turns out Akechi hasn't discovered him this time round, but all of his friends have got different personalities. And so he can't deal with this either, so he returns back to the normal timeline and basically confesses. And so now Akechi knows that he's a psychic, promises to keep it a secret, and they're basically on the same page, except then we learn why he was being picked on by those bullies. Is because in the past he'd previously confessed to him. And then, as a kid, he basically went around telling everyone that Psyche had psychic powers, and that's why they were picking on him. And so he's like, oh, is this all going to happen again as a teenager? Is he going to be able to keep his mouth shut? Am I going to have to wipe all my friends' memories and move to a different school? So it's heading towards the end, but I don't think it won't reach the end in this season. I'm guessing they'll do another 12 episodes after next week's final episode. Because I know there's two more main characters who haven't shown up yet.
Oh, dear.
But no, it was a good episode. It starts off serious and then sort of veers into more ridiculousness, but then gives you that final payoff of like, oh, that was why he was bullied. That's why he was so desperate not to be found out. Because it's happened before, and it went really badly for him and ruined a friendship he had. And it gives you more idea of why he's the way he is. Then, next on the list, we've got Ninja Girl and Samurai Master, episode 64, Towards the Light, in which we meet Kenyo's wife, Neoshuni, who I am assuming is portrayed here as some sort of Osaka stereotype.
Yeah, that's the impression I got. I was trying to look her up real quick there. Be honest to her. I like her though. I want to see more of her, so I hope sticks around for a bit.
Oh yeah, I'm pretty sure we, from what limited I could find out about her, because there doesn't seem to be much in English about her. Yeah, but I do think she's has a decent amount of story beyond Nobunaga's story. So,
and she's the only person with the. Not the only person with anime hair, but the only person with like anime colored hair in the show so far.
Yes, that's correct.
The bright pink.
And we get to see some getting like idea of this particular brand of Buddhism, which then turns out to greatly appeal to Shidori.
Because she'll be forgiven of all. I love the way like he's coming up to her. He's like, "You will never be forgiven unless you want to be, and then you will be." You know, the kind of like he seems to be like about to threaten her, but it's like, "No, absolutely, you can join my religion." Yeah, and obviously a lot of shit weighs on her because she's killed a lot of fuckers.
Yes,
but it was a nice this just kind of serious moment in the middle of this. It's kind of bouncing on doing a thing, and then it's just. That line very casually, and then that puts like a whole new perspective on things then, especially for her. So I'm kind of wondering is something like that well no, because she snaps out of it, but it's something that is obviously been in the back of her mind. She's serving Nobunaga, but
it's called into question recently, like, because she had to kill someone she liked, that kind of thing.
Yes.
What's the cost to her own psyche? You know, is this affecting her beyond? You know, I may have to turn my allies. No, I may have to like fucking kill people that I like, or kill people who may not have deserved it because I pledged to serve my master. But why is this as a person? Where is my duty to my master and my duty of care to myself begin?
And
there's also a bit of the general theme of Nobunaga's idea of I'm doing this to unify Japan, so therefore we won't have these wars and hardships anymore. Whereas Kenyo seems to be saying, you just have to accept that there will be wars and hardships, and but the next life will be better than this shitty life you've got currently.
Nice.
But there's still jokes about him offering to shave his head to apologize to Nobunaga.
Quite history Japan had been in really constant warfare for the better part of a century. So.
Yes, so yeah, you kind of got to say the idea of anything different is probably hard to conceive at that point.
Visionary and pragmatic realist.
Yeah. And then we get also like a glimpse of like how many people are likely to align with the with Kenyo and his monks should the worst eventually come to the worst, because like a massive amount of people, and it's not just like the peasants, there's also warriors coming as well, because you like get a glimpse of swords of the people going up there. And yeah, and it also establishes the relationship between Kenyo and Neoshuni quite well, of them being very much in love.
Despite personality very different. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because that's demonstrated by Neoshuni patting him on his giant bald head. Not much more to add, I don't think. And then that what they called the something three
Like, Ino 3 and Tatsuoki Saito. He's back again. Yes. We expect it.
Also, there's a new Akitara Daiichi anime on YouTube. One of his, I assume, solo hand-drawn things. It's about another ninja. It's not the one who's been turned into a cyborg. It's another perverted ninja cartoon that he's done. It is literally just one joke. And if you look at his Twitter, it's him larking around dressed as ninjas going to ninja things. It's heavily ninja-themed content.
Been doing this for too long, it's seeped into his brain.
Yes. Then we got Gurazeni Money Pitch, episode 12, The Lonely Gourmet, in which the girl finally shows up from the end credits.
Was everyone disappointed?
Beat Takeshi shows up briefly as a character who's mostly seen off screen. Possibly as himself, because they do refer to him as Takeshi. Do they also get him to do the eye catch?
Oh, yeah, they do the different...
It seems to be a different voice doing the name of the show this week.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if that was because the cute girl has been revealed, so it was her voice all along. Fucking conspiracies.
So the first half of the episode, his Bonda basically being as in his head about this girl as much as he is about other players who earn more than him.
I mean, like, he's going through the players' wives as he would through how much they earn, but because how much they earn is based off the wife's career as well. What the high earners get, the reporters and models and that kind of thing, and then other people get like a bunch of air hostesses, like three people married to air hostesses.
I assume this is...
But he does comment that all of them are gorgeous.
I'm guessing this is a real-life observation on...
I'd say it probably is, yeah. Right?
Yes, yeah. I'm pretty sure it is. I don't know much about Japanese baseball. I do know that there's at least one wrestler whose career I follow who is married to a news reporter. And
so he's doing well then?
Yes, he was the top guy for most of the time during that Seema from Dragon Gate. He's now. Well, I won't get that. I've got higher hopes that Seema's going to be back in the UK soon because he's now sort of in Dragon Gate, sort of not in Dragon Gate. He's started and they've split into two, and he's part of a Chinese wrestling organization. And then they found a group. There's like a group of wrestlers within that organization, and they're apparently free to go wherever they like. I know he'd like to come to do European shows because that meant he could go and visit his wife's family in Greece. Because he'd come and do shows in the UK, and then on the way home, rather than go straight back to Japan, he'd stop in Greece. So, and some of the guys, basically, it's OWE, I think is the Chinese group, and what they've done is they found a bunch of guys who know Shaolin Kung Fu, and they're training them to be wrestlers.
Oh man, that sounds great.
Yes.
Holy shit.
From the clips I've seen, the results look very good. And they've only been doing it in like 6 months.
Fucking hell. Well, I guess they're fit enough, like, yeah.
Yeah. So it's just learning the rules of wrestling.
Learning the style of it. Like, maybe if they knew something closer to like wushu, they kind of know. It's like, yeah, you know, kind of for a show combat.
Yeah, there was a clip going around of like one of the guys doing like a no hands leap from the ground into the ring.
Oh fuck!
If we put those guys out of work, if they get any momentum going.
Anyway, back to this. Yeah, so the first is basically him just sitting in the restaurant, going through all the other wives of the people in his team, and then imagining an ideal conversation he'd have with her, which has never happened. And then seeing a bunch of white-collar guys inviting her to a game at his stadium.
He's like, but I play baseball. I'm a baseball man.
Talk to me.
But he's going on about how nice it is not to be recognised to begin with, and then he's annoyed at not being recognised by the end.
Yeah, but then happy again. Oh, God damn it.
and then happy again.
But I guess it's good that I'm not recognized in this case.
Yeah, by the end, once she hates him.
Yeah.
And then the second half is him inadvertently making her hate him.
Well, he appears to be playing dirty, but it's just kind of working out badly for him. But, I mean, like, good for the team.
He's playing very well, though, because he has inadvertently set up double play so that they can get the three outs in the one inning,
But he's doing it in a way that messes with the foreign player's head, because where a ball is called is slightly further out in Japan rules, so they're always arguing with the umpire, and you know it's just like he's doing it in seemingly very dirty ways. He like hobbles one dude by hitting him in the shin, or is it the ankle or something?
First of all, he runs it. He basically clobbers their top batsman.
Yeah.
Trying to get to first base. Then he hits their second top guy in the shin.
Mm.
So then he's already in the head of the third guy.
Like, he's mostly doing this because he's super nervous, because the girl he fancies is watching his game and rooting for the opposite team, and they're very angry.
Also a fan from two different worlds, it'll never work.
And then he comments that it now feels like he's home stadium, but it feels like an away game because of how much grief the Osaka fans are giving him again.
Yeah.
She riled up the foreign guy, and then he fucking gets sent off. Then so they've lost three of their best starting guys in the space of a couple of pitches. And it's like,
and they got like
Vanda.
Two walk-ons, but like, yeah, I think it just on the time of it, they missed the chance to avail of them. Just poor timing, like.
But yeah, the cuts to her getting increasingly angry and increasingly
and
harsh.
The salary men going like, "Holy shit!"
It's great because you've seen like, you know, in the credits, or you've always seen the restaurant being all happy and perky, and when she's in the baseball game, so she's going, "Come on, fucking kick his ass, get that boom,"
you know, that kind of thing. Yeah, different personality in the game.
Bag. And then when he leaves, he accidentally makes eye contact with her, and he thinks, "Oh, I'm doomed." But then he makes good of it. He thinks, "Oh well, at least when we go in the restaurant, we'll have something to talk about now."
Yeah,
and then she doesn't recognize him.
Hated him one night, doesn't recognize him the next. Maybe that's for the best. So he can still dream about, "I'm going to talk to that girl someday. Someday, one of these days."
And out next season.
Yeah, next season.
when he's earning more money, like that's the thing he says at the start as well. It's like, "Man, I might be MMO, but like, you know, in a restaurant, but you know, next season I'm going to be earning a lot more money. It seems more feasible. We're going to get married eventually, maybe, to someone I haven't had a fucking conversation with."
now she got brought in, and like, okay, she's in the show now. There's another dude who has been in the program, but hasn't really had any spotlight put on him, really had any spoken lines.
Hmm.
Is the catcher.
That's what I thought as well this episode.
The catcher is, he's the catcher is extremely important to pitcher. I thought, why hasn't he brought in by now in this anime about a baseball pitcher? I guess just going to drag that on. Like, when are we going to get an episode with the pitcher?
He's not cute, though. He's got all the spots on his face.
But yeah, this was the first episode, really, where the catcher's directions to the pitcher were made an issue of.
Yeah.
Because he wasn't really following them after a point. Or he was trying to follow them, but he kept on cocking up.
Well, also, your man was going like, "Yeah, go for another one. Really rile the fucker up." And he's like, "Oh, Jesus, dude, they're already really mad at me."
Looking forward to it coming back. I saw on Twitter, it looks like he breaks his arm or something in the next season.
Oh, no. Oh, that'll affect his contract, and then the numbers.
Yeah, no doubt. Then we got Bono Bono, episode 12, Baby Bear Has a Cold. This is an episode for all the parents watching. I feel like more than the kids, because it's all about getting old and Boss Bear realizing that maybe he doesn't know these words as well as he thinks he does.
Well, he does seem to get lost very easy. Also, he hasn't been here, so he didn't know that path got washed away in a storm.
Well, that is one of things. That is a great recurring gag, though, of Boss Bear falling in the river and having to be rescued.
Yeah. That's as well, like, you know, you think, oh, a guy be the strong adult and make sure these children are fine and they're safe and they're cared for and they're being raised right, but they're mostly, in Bottle's case at least, definitely getting on all right or just doing their own thing.
Mm.
Yeah, and we get, what's the big sister who sings her Bursal song? It's
Die, isn't it? Oh, it's Die.
I always remember Sho's name because she's the one I'm scared of. So Bono decides to lead Boss Bear to Baby Bear because he's got a cold. And Boss Bear doesn't want to be seen back because he said he wouldn't be back. So they take this secret path after he falls in the river.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I said I wouldn't come back unless I defeated Fishing Cat. But my kids got a cold. And he's like, so why'd you come back? Well, because my kids got a cold. If we just don't tell anyone, it'll be fine. It'll all work out.
I must follow the arbitrary rule I made for myself as a man.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
So they go along this wooded path. And he's like, oh, I remember this path. And he's all these things he remembers. And then Bono points out, they're not the things you remember. It's like, it's the scratch I made on this tree. And they're like, no, me, Chipmunk and Raccoon did that the other week. Here's these nuts I used to eat. No, that's Wolverine's poop.
This appears to be a well-traveled path. I don't think this was the best way.
That's true, yes, because we do know that Wolverine had been down here because that's where Bono learnt that Baby Bear had got a cold.
Mm.
But then Boss Bear gets really proud of his son when he learns that he taught Bono how to catch fish.
Mm. Makes him all like manly passionate. He catches a bunch of fish in a manly fit.
Bono takes a load of fish to Baby Bear and then learns that, he hasn't got a cold. He was just imitating his dad.
Who has since got a cold from falling in the river.
Yes. Then he spots his dad standing outside the cave and starts standing like his dad as well. And we see a melancholic, is probably the way to describe it.
Yeah, I think that's the best way, because when he gets back to the path and he's looking at the scratches, he just looks further up in the tree. He's like, there's the fucking scratch I made.
Yes.
It's like, shit, I'm getting fucking old, man. Yeah, time is moving on without him, obviously.
No forest for old bears.
It's Bono. It's always a good episode.
Mm.
Don't think it really puts a foot wrong. Unlike Shonen Shiba, which I briefly checked in on, and if anything, it looks worse.
Jesus.
Yeah, Shiba's got really angular, but not in a good Shin-chan way.
Like he's gotten all pointy in the head?
He's got a lot pointier, yes.
Yeah, okay.
I looked myself, and it sounded like there's some good episodes there where a few ones set in Aztec Hall where Sugawa's gotten into some new thing. And now, I mean, that's made Chit-chan and Yeti super jealous, and they're going to try and get his attention again. Oh, yeah, those two teamed up to try and harass Sugawa. That sounds like it would be great. But how's it going to look, though? will it be able to sell that idea to me in a visually comedic fashion?
Yeah.
I'd say my only disappointment with this Bono episode is when Big Sister Die went past Boss Bear. I was like, is that the combination we get in this episode?
That'd be one of those weird ass combinations.
Yeah,
the show does very well. Maybe it was a hint towards it or something.
It would be a really interesting combination.
I don't even know how they'd have a conversation.
No.
Presumably they talk about being adults as well, which
yes.
would just be hilarious
I
from
think
both their points
Dai
of view.
Dai would be like scared of him but try and be super polite at the same time.
Because he is an elder. Yeah.
Yes. Then You Don't Know Gunma Yet, episode 12. We didn't know Gunma yet. I assume this is the last episode. This was an amazing episode.
I checked it. There is a planet Gunma. It's hard to find stuff on, so I had to look up the astronomer and look up his discoveries, and then it's like, oh yeah, he did name one, like a small outside planetoid or something like that. I forget what it's called.
Yeah. So in this episode, our four main characters get killed almost immediately.
Yeah, they were going to the shrine we see in the end sequence, I think, and they get in a traffic accident and all fucking die.
In some of the amazingly bad CG car animation I've ever seen. It looks like the cars are staying perfectly stationary and the road's revolving around a mountain.
That sounds like it'd be more expensive to fucking animate. But yeah, okay.
I mean, it doesn't look expensive.
No, no, it sounds like it would.
Yes.
Be. It didn't look it, no.
They all die.
They all die. They get hit by a lorry.
Yeah.
They know too much about Gunrad to be left to leave.
Yeah.
Well, it turns out they've died too soon. It's a mistake. They're in heaven.
Bearded figures, not specifically Saint Peter or anything. It's just like, you know, heaven guys.
Yeah, it's whatever afterlife you believe in. These two guys could easily fit into it.
Yeah, beardy guys, you know.
Yeah,
in clouds and shit.
What are you doing here?
Yeah, they're like, oh,
you guys aren't supposed to be dead yet. Where are you guys from?
We're from Good. Oh, we're Goodma. We were going to go into whatever the name of the shrine is.
Yeah.
And okay, we'll send you right back. Don't worry. So they get back, and then they keep on seeing weird things, and yet they try to pass them off as, oh no, that's just that thing from Goodma.
It's like there's giant fucking vines, and it's like, no, we must be near that. That's blah 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 snake sanctuary. Obviously, must be near that place. You know that.
Okay, it's moving
trying
vines.
To figure out where in Goodma they are.
Yeah, skeletons. They think, oh no, that's just a white birch.
That was it. Yeah.
Bats, giant. They go, oh no, of course there are these sorts of bats around here. Or do they say crows? Yeah. And then they see, like, oh no, the bats are like human bodies and faces.
And your man's like, I knew the Gunma was evil, and obviously your one's reacting poorly to that.
And then the narrator explains that, yes, there's like a tiny planetoid named after the shrine they mentioned, and also one named after Gunma. And so they've been sent to there rather than back to Gunma.
So I presume they'll all die because they're on an island filled with monsters in an ocean on a planet far, far away.
Yeah. End of the episode. And then the mayor...
The fucking mayor doesn't help at all. God damn it.
Somewhere shows up and tells you to come to Gunma again.
I'm not fucking going to go to Gunma. That place is crazy, man.
Now, I'd quite like this to be the last episode, but I also wouldn't mind if it came back and just ignored everything which happened in this episode.
Oh, yeah, sure. No, I'm fine with that. I'm fine with learning more facts, not really, about Gunma.
Yeah, it was the fact that them being sent to an alien planet still was a fact about Gunma.
Yep, it was true. Oh, God, that's the weird part. It's like, where? I mean, like, obviously, I can't verify that there are bad people living on that planetoid. But other than that, yeah, all seems to be pretty true.
Yeah. Righty-ho. Are you both still there? Went quiet for there for a moment.
Oh, yep.
Okay, right. Okay, next up is My Hero Academia, episode 50, End of the Beginning of the End. In which Eraserhead and All Might go around making apologies for the terrible things the students have gone through.
Well, that and trying to sell the parents on
the dorms.
The new dorm system.
You endangered your children enough. Do you? It's okay if we bring them even closer to the school.
Well, I think the idea is, so at least if they can protect them in like one place rather than, you know, the commute, the shopping center, a random piece of woods that no one should have known about. It's like, okay, if we have them in like one fucking place, presumably we can protect them.
Yeah, one place where there may be a traitor.
One place, so yeah, they're all one big target, I would think. Like, what the hell? Come on.
Yeah, it's not the best plan, but maybe they have it's a sting operation or something. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah.
What the logic is what
children,
I mean.
Children is fucking, as far as sting operation, that's just incredibly bad.
Yeah.
But the thing is, in the comic, this is treated as a good plan, and that there has been no flaws with up till this date.
Right, okay.
So it's not... I don't think there is any subversion of this planned, or at least hinted at all.
Okay.
I mean, there's been one red herring so far regarding the traitor.
Yeah, you were saying someone looked like it, but then was proved to definitely not be, or something?
Yeah. Mm. So, yeah, I don't know whether this is just a weak bit of writing, or it will come back to bite them in the butt, as all of their things do. But I feel like this... Because a cynical one would say, oh, they're just doing this to protect the reputation of UA in the wake of All Might no longer having his powers, and so therefore they've got to increase confidence in superheroes. But it just feels like they're doing it honestly for the right reasons. Otherwise, yeah, the series falls apart, if you like. Your mouse head teacher and Eraser Head are doing this for cynical reasons, or almost doing it for cynical reasons, that it doesn't ring true anymore.
I don't actually think they were planning on weeding out the traitor this way. It's just like, I'm not exactly sure the logic. It doesn't, like you said, it's just gathering all the fucking target into one goddamn place, which only makes it a bigger target.
There's just kind of belief in it that it doesn't make no much of a blind for. I mean, I was looking in from the outside, I couldn't see. Well, there's one massive problem with this.
So
I did see an argument for another traitor as well as Kaminari.
Okay.
And that was for, I can't remember her name now, it's the Invisible Girl.
Oh, yeah. I always forget she's there, which I think is appropriate.
Yes. But the big part of the episode is the conversation between All Might and Midoriya's mum.
I do like the fact this is like basically a bunch of parent-teacher conferences. That's kind of nice. It sells itself pretty well as that.
Well, also, you're getting to see the parents. So let's get to Bakugo's mom and dad.
Yes.
It explains a bunch, I think, but not entirely.
Yeah, but there was definitely an explosion of fan art around this point in the comic of Bakugo's mom.
About who? About who, pray tell?
Bakugo's mom.
Isn't it like she puts out nitroglycerin from her skin, so it keeps her skin young and healthy or something?
I think it was just people were like, oh, it's Bakugo with boobs. I think that was all they needed.
I hadn't thought of it like that. Yes. Sure. Okay.
For the obvious reasons, but there is like a nice little moment when the teachers are leaping for the car and Bakugo stops him to drive. I was saying, All Might, what's Deku to you? And yes, to give him the live ones, and he's another one of my students like you. But he knows straight away. Fine, fucking don't tell me then.
No, he's like I get that you can't tell me. That's cool, and he does thank All Might, that kind of stuff. It softens him a bunch.
A little disappointed though, as well.
Of course, yeah.
If anybody's going to get taken under the wing of his favorite hero, he would wish it would have been him, not the guy who, had looked down all these years, and then now he's getting what he feels he could have worked towards himself, but now he can't. It's like, yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, like that with the him constantly giving out to his mom and her just giving him a smack in the head or holding his head down or shouting at him, get out off the road, the police said you can't be outside. You know, that kind of stuff. I was just very...
Admit it now.
Yeah, it kind of goes like, oh, that's right. He might be fucking insane, but he is a kid, you know?
Yeah, I think the personality of Bakugo's mom comes across a lot better in the anime than it did in the comic. She feels a lot more aggressive, and you get more of an idea of where his personality comes from that I felt from the comic.
In front of the teachers, his mom is just constantly shit-talking him. It was like, because he's great at everything. He's got a big fucking head, you know? But like, and again, she picks it up like she's 100%. I think all the parents were 100% on board with this, but she's on board because... of what Eraserhead said at that press conference. It's like, yeah, you get my kid.
What's the earplugs girl's name? I liked her dad pretending that he was going to get mad at them.
I wanted to be all like an angry dad. Come on. Shit. I'm trying to remember her name now.
Yeah, and next week we get all the dorms, which the dorm rooms, which is a good bit of comedy.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, that main conversation between All Might and Midoriya's mem is really good. Really gives her a lot more to do, because it's like, yeah, this is, it's kind of effed up, and she's reacting to it appropriately, I would say, as a decent parent would.
Yeah, and more importantly, it's All Might finally properly admitting that he's been screwing up.
Yeah.
Up to this point.
Yeah,
it's just I mean, like, she's still impressed that he came to the house, and she is like, "Whoa, don't go down on your hands and knees and shit. What are you doing?" And he's like, "No, I royally fucked up."
Yes, because we've had it from Gran Torino. More for our benefit as the reader viewer than really from him, because it's quite often it's Torino commenting on it rather than telling him off. So it'd be Torino observing something from a distance and despairing at the way he's behaving.
It seems to be just how he is. Like, he didn't even want to out and out say anything to Midoriya. He was just like, "I'm gonna fucking use really obscure ways of explaining all my shit to this kid."
And also Midoriya picking up all his bad habits as well.
Yeah.
And what I really liked about that is, like, you know, just going to talk, and his Midoriya's mom is saying, like, "Well, not like my, I know, like, your, my son's here on that, and he must have worked with you, and that's fantastic." But even that, I step in and say, "No, like, my child's in danger. I can't have this anymore." And Midoriya, he gets up and he kind of runs out of the room. And think, "Oh, obviously he's
storming off like a teenager."
Well, he comes back and says, "Friend, ma'am, I know. I don't want to feel him right now. Like, I can do the hero course somewhere else. I've actually looked up a few of them online already. But I thought this might happen." It's like, Midoriya, you're a good lad. You're a good lad.
He's a good kid. He's a nice kid.
But yeah, but
as much as he wants to do this, like, he wants to, like, he doesn't want to perform worried. Now he just.
It's just the letter that he shows her, where it's like, "This is what I want. Like, this kid thanked me, even though he hates everything that I fucking stand for." You can just see it's like, that's what I want to achieve, and I can do it doing some other course if necessary.
And that's when All Might sees that, because he expected him, you know, All Might expected him to, he kind of run out of the room. "Oh, like, he's following in my footsteps, so if you can't do that anymore, maybe he's going to feel disheartened by it." But he comes back and does that instead. All Might saying, "Fuck's sake, this guy, this kid's not following me. He's doing his own thing. He's doing it much better than I could."
So he basically has to ask permission. "I want this guy to take up my mantle. This kid is too good. This is the guy I want to take over what was it, the Pillar of Justice or something like that? Yeah, the Symbol of Peace, that obviously is unoccupied at the moment.
But then the key thing is his mum making All Might promise that he's not going to get himself killed.
Yeah, because he said, I'll lay my life down if I need to. And he's like, "Don't fucking do that. Come on." That's probably why my kid has gotten so bad in the first place.
Yeah.
You know?
But at the same time, it addresses a fundamental part of these types of stories of, like, the mentor throwing their lives away in order to get the hero to move on. It's like, don't do that.
Yeah, that's a remarkably bad idea. just alone in the precedent it sets. Because, I mean, like, that's what Midoriya has kind of been doing up to this point.
Yeah, and there's
one thing All Might thanks him for when he's giving him his berating. is kind of like, "I was so proud of you when you managed to get out of that shitty situation without getting fucking hurt at all." That's ideal.
But in general, it's the thing hanging over the series ever since we knew of the injuries All Might had taken in the last fight with All For One.
I would hope it's going to sidestep that whole thing, because it's cheap drama has played out.
Well, I got some bad news for you, Noel. I mean, he's still alive at the moment, but that cheap drama is one of my problems I've got with whatever they're calling, whatever the arc is called where they go up against the Yakuza. I was happily into it at the start of that arc, but by the end of that arc, I was of a similar opinion of, like, the cheap drama would be my where why I didn't like the ending of it by the end.
Maybe you have to find like a motivation. Well, obviously, the motivation why you're doing this now, because it doesn't really need any other thing. Like it'll be enough when Shigaraki comes along again and does this whole thing. His motivation is to want to stop him because I want to be a hero, like All Might. No, that's all he needs. He doesn't need, I must avenge my master's death as well. It's like, that's just too much.
It's not cheap drama on. It's not cheap drama in wringing out stuff from Midoriya. In fact, that arc is pretty good for Midoriya getting more mature motivations of himself. It's just cheap drama as presented to the reader.
Oh, that's a bit unfortunate because with this story, and it, like you say, it's addressing all those problems of throwing your body in the fucking line of fire and letting your body fall apart from underneath you, no matter the cost, and those kind of shonen tropes. It's like, yeah, don't fucking do those. Those are bad. Yeah. It will be bad if you keep using your arms so they keep breaking and then you can't fucking use your arms anymore. That is bad.
Yeah. No, I would say my criticism is more, it's the lines of, I mean, I won't say how it ties in with All Might, but it introduces characters who you like, and then you rip by the end, and you're like, oh, you only made me like them, so I would be upset when you've done these horrible things to them by the end of the story.
Right, right, right.
Which I don't think it had done up to that point.
I think as well, we've kind of seen the flip side of that when they're hauling off All From One to Super Jail. And it's like, ha ha, I'm done, but I also believe in the future like you do, All Might, and I have my own guy who's going to step in and...
Yeah, I mean, like,
new face of villainy.
The police conference going like, yeah, every time they lose, they just get better. Like, we've stopped him up to this point, but he just keeps getting, like, playing it, Shigaraki keeps playing it smarter each time. So, he's invested in a kind of future where it's like he's building something up outside of himself, but he seems happier with being put in super jail because it's like, yeah, you're supposed to let your students go and do their thing, because if you stick around, you're going to hinder their growth. But I'm not sure if in the end of this episode it's suggesting that All Might is up for that, supporting that growth rather than hindering it as he has been doing up to this point.
Do you know if they've announced the cast for the characters from the other schools who show up in the next arc?
I don't think so. I mean, I haven't seen anything about it, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure that must be coming probably next week, I guess.
Yeah, that's... I mean, like, are they adapting that part of it?
Yeah, it's the license arc, I believe, next.
Okay. I wasn't sure.
Which...
I don't think I finished that one,
Which, as exciting as and pivotal as these last two arcs have been, I think I might prefer the license arc just because I think I prefer the stuff where it's more focused on the school stuff.
Yeah. You'd be kind of happier if it was like a Harry Potter situation. School, they're all doing fucking magical fucking shit or superhero shit, whatever.
And yeah, I think...
Said it's like, well, I was kind of happier just with the hijinks things.
Yeah, I think it's on firmer ground when it's like, how does society integrate superpowers rather than when it's dealing with the Shigaraki stuff.
Sure.
Though I do always like when Shigaraki shows up and some other character basically insults him. Righty-ho, next on the list is Cutie Honey Universe, episode 12, You Will Return With Hope, in which the show finally looks like what it should have done for the previous 11 episodes, and kind of did everything I wanted it to.
I mean, like, it was a long time ago, but I was basically hate-watching at this point. Oh, I hated this ending too.
What do you hate about the ending?
Like, people came back cheaply, but not everyone came back, and then some people died because just fuck it.
So we can bring everybody back to life, yeah? but not this person. What? Why not?
Well, everyone else appeared to just, like, we didn't even bring them back to life. They just walked out of fucking hell, apparently. That's the explanation.
I think only one person came back from the dead.
No, her entire gang came out.
No, I think that's a different gang of ugly teenagers.
She met a new gang of ugly girls?
Yeah.
Huh. I thought that was the same gang. They all managed to bust out of hell, but without a pen or whatever.
No, I think she was just buried under the... She was just burnt and had dragged herself. I don't think she literally had dragged herself from hell. I think she was alive all this time.
I assume she did. She's very muscular.
What you might be confused by is there's a bunch of character designs introduced in this last episode who have never been used up to this point.
That's probably messing me as well. Yeah, sure.
But yeah, I think I took a screenshot of the bit at the end, the postscript when they're rebuilding the school, and I'm pretty sure it's a different gang of ugly girls.
Okay.
I think everybody else are just Panther Claw investigative doodahs.
Yeah.
Who've shown up, and a bunch we've never seen before. There's the other brother from the Abashiri family, the one who was based on Ken Ishikawa. He's part of them. I think the giant woman who shows up in Abashiri family, but she was from another comic before that. I think she's one of them. But and there's a bunch of people I didn't recognize. And then there's just a bunch of people who just look like Cutie Honey. Yeah. I thought that originally myself, Dwayne, but then I've rewatched this episode many, many times and convinced myself the opposite, particularly by the end when I took that screenshot. I was like, yeah, I don't think those are supposed to be that gang.
Okay. Well, despite how good this episode looked, I have no interest in watching it a second time.
Yes, so she's Gil Panther, I believe, is the combined one's name. Honey looks like she's out for the count, and Sister Jill's about to kill her when another Cutie Honey shows up, and then another, and then two more, which barely look like Cutie Honey.
Oh yeah, I forgot to mention, I figured like Dragon was up for the chop because it made me like the character, and then it's like, well, that character is dead now, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like instantly started the episode, basically.
Then we get some very useful use of rotoscoping in a dance scene.
Yeah, everyone does the dance.
Not everyone. Tarantula didn't join in.
Oh, that's true. Yeah,
it was just the lads.
I guess as a way to prove to me you're Cutie Honey, it's like, I know the dance in the opening sequence. That's a reasonable proof.
It's kind of reinforced for me the voice actor for Dante. Like, how old he must be, because he really sounds like he's struggling to keep up with the energy of everybody else in this.
Then the rest of the investigative force show up, along with Nyalko, who was, as she says, she's travelled back from hell with darker skin, so I assume she just got burnt from the firebombing which was happening previously. And the only two who don't dress up as Cutie Honey are those teenage hackers who insult everybody the entire time.
I fucking hate those characters.
Yeah, they insult them again here. What a bunch of idiots they call everybody.
Yeah, they're just hiding behind a rock while, like, a lot of people are getting blown the fuck away.
Junpei again fails to throw his bomb.
Well, I think it's because the sad rain.
Yes, the sad rain had flowed down. Then everyone gets enveloped in light. They travel into the Large Hadron Collider, maybe?
Yeah.
The space. Yes. They meet God. Goddess Panthersora.
Yes.
Panthersora is pleased to see them. They destroy God, which all sounds great, but yeah, it's a very odd sequence.
They all get Cutie Honey powers.
Yeah. Except they shout their own name, I think.
Yes.
To do, yeah, all the block or the sword or whatever, yeah.
Sister Jill tries to win, but every time she She gets sliced up and she resets herself, but every time she resets herself, then Honey's sword grows another blade from the goodness of the hearts of the other cutie honeys.
All of her friends, inverted
yes.
commas?
Including at the end, Sister Jill herself.
Hmm.
And, yeah, so Sister Jill's defeated. The Tarantula Panther has torn herself apart, literally.
Hmm.
They rebuild the school. Honey goes back to school. Nyaoko asks her out on a date. And she didn't say no.
Yes, I know.
Yeah. The boys are upset that Honey can't stay with them any longer because they're a couple of perverts. Nat-chan's ring. So Honey kisses that. School's being rebuilt. The end. Credits roll. They show you scenes from the comic which look better than the scenes did in the actual animation. Probably not a good move.
Yeah.
These pages are great. Why couldn't we have gotten this, yes. this program instead? Or why didn't you pick one of the approaches you had in mind for this anime and this gorgeous? Because you clearly had two ideas in mind, versus you had one way that you want to retell the story, but you feel too stick close to the comics then and do everything in there. So, and it's kind of detracting from the things you're trying to adapt yourselves or redo yourselves. It's like, oh, come on. It felt somewhat more frustrating then at the end.
Well, then it didn't really do anything with Sister Jill like it was wanting to do or claiming it was doing that kind of way. It's like she even gets like a little redemption thing at the end. It's like, goodbye, my buddy, Janet, and that kind of shit. And she turns into Sparkles. And I was just like, no, fuck that person. She's a dick.
Well, that's the thing, is because basically we see Sister Jill like basically made a bet with God that she could corrupt the heart of an angel. And by the end, she learns that she couldn't.
I don't know. It seemed like a very fucking difficult way to do it, but I also don't like the Book of Job, so it's kind of a dick move all around.
It gave me the ending I wanted. Once I'd seen the opening credits in the first episode where everyone had turned to cutie honeys, I was like, if it gives me that, I'll be happy by the end. The fact that they had travelled down a Higgs boson tunnel to speak with God, and God turned out to be the head of the villainous organization they were fighting in the first place, and they made no attempt to explain this. I'm fully on board with that.
Okay.
If Hunter's aura didn't seem that malevolent in the end, really.
No.
This seems to kind of attached to everything.
And I kind of quite like that, just by the way that in the comic, Panther's aura is barely a character.
Hmm.
And to make it like this, almost like just this idea that Sister Jill's thinks she's taking orders from, or is trying to compete with, or show off to.
Yes, or she's taking direction from it, but is misreading the intention
yes.
of that altogether and corrupting the message that Panazero's trying to impart, or whatever it is.
But yeah, I looked for the credits, and this is the only episode actually directed by the series director. And that was maybe
you came
also
into work that day, all right.
And I was also like, yeah, because I've loved other things he's directed episodes of, mainly for Masaki Yuasa projects, Kimonozume, and like a whole load of episodes of Kaiba. And then seeing this and some of the action in this, and even some of the, like the repeated close up of Honey's eye when she's being stomped on by Jill is good, and Jill's got some really great faces. It's like, why could it not look this good all the way through? But then it's whoever's making it is the problem, I believe. Palm. It's like, this is the first one in ages they've been the main producer on, I read. And people were wondering before the series started how well they'd manage to produce it, and I would say not very well. And I do wonder, I don't have much hope for it being improved for Blu-ray release.
Yeah.
It would take
a bunch of episodes being heavily done. It is also weird, like, episode 3, 6, 9, and 12 are the best, and it's almost like, can you just rewrite the other episodes as well?
You can do that too. Are you allowed to do that?
I hope so.
But at the same time, I always look forward to watching it on the Sunday. Wasn't always rewarded for how much I look forward to watch it.
I would always save something to watch fucking after just to get the fucking taste of it out. Generally, Bono would do the trick, but, you know.
Yeah, obviously, Rikki Honey, I think everyone would agree, is a better outing, but even that's not flawless because that middle episode.
It's not perfect. It really sags in the middle of this, but pulls it back somewhat in the third bit. And then the first one is just great, like, really good, and then, yeah.
But maybe they should have done what they did with Rikki Honey and give an episode for Toei to do so they could use the theme tune. Because I can't believe people still blaming them for not having the theme tune by the 12th episode when I thought it fairly decently documented now that it was just because it wasn't Toei. They did not have access to the theme tune.
I think it's an unusual circumstance, just like it being between studios, because generally, I think it's probably just because it's an older property.
Yeah, and it's made worse by the fact that Magical Girl RA had a pretty good parody of it. As its theme tune.
I would say they just get over themselves because it wasn't the one that you've heard before, but it was still, I thought, a pretty...
Yeah, it's a decent song.
...catchy theme tune. Yeah, I think it was kind of dancing, but it probably stood out a lot more coming out in a season where you had that also got its own theme song, and then Kitaro as well also got its old classic theme song, and then, well, they got theirs, what's why didn't you get yours?
Yeah.
It's still not the worst Kiyo or anything. Kiyo Honey Tears. Oh boy. Right.
Or it's like a fucking cyberpunk dystopia, isn't it?
It is, yeah. It feels, if it was marketed as like a heroic trio remake, I think it would have been more palatable. It is worse than this. Anyway, on to things we probably all enjoyed more than we did enjoyed Cutie Honey Universe. Gegege no Kitaro, episode 13, Diamonds of Greed, Wanyudo's Trap.
This is what I thought, like, a lot of people died in this episode.
No, they didn't.
I know, at least one guy got shot. So
yeah, but we saw he was still alive after he got shot.
With a bullet wound in him, I assume.
Yeah, he was told how much. He was told, do you know how much money we wasted shooting you? Just to really establish those guys from the diamond company, which is definitely not a real life diamond company.
I'm pretty sure they're just criminals.
It's some fucking grim shit, though.
Oh, yes. Yeah, because up until the end, you're like, this is a massive amount of people being turned into diamonds and then sold as diamonds.
Well, what's your man's? Is it Neko? Not Nekozumi. Nezo.
Ratman.
Nezumi,
I can never fucking remember the Japanese name.
Yes.
Friggin' Ratman is basically like digging up what were parts of humans and putting them in a wheelbarrow to fucking sell to people. I was just like, this is horrible.
They were greedy humans, so it's all right till that point. It's only once they start human trafficking humans in to be turned into diamonds.
It somehow is worse, yeah, obviously, because, you know, you've refugees trying to find a better life for themselves, and it's like, haha, now you're fucking currency.
You know, there are children in these coming off in containers. Yeah. And it's like,
it's bad enough when it's just like killing random greedy people, but it's like, yeah, okay, now you're just killing completely innocent fucking people.
Well, yeah, that's the point. That's the point, which is too much for Nezumi Otoko to take. And I like the line the story takes of, you've got his greed, then you've got the greed of the people who want cheap diamonds, you've got Wanyudo's greed, then you've got this diamond corporation's greed who's worse than all of them, but then their greed infects Wanyudo and his greed gets worse and out of control.
Yeah.
And so Kitaro has to step in and help out his friend, even though Nozomi Otoko had disowned him at the start.
Yeah, there's the thing of, like, he tries to rope Kitaro into his bullshit, where he's just like, you're all really good because it makes you feel good, or for profit, or whatever. And Kitaro's like, no, I fucking don't. I just do it because I feel like So yeah, it's like, why do you hang around with this guy? He's an asshole. But yeah, it does show that there's a line there and that they are weirdly still friends.
Yeah, and you get a bigger glimpse of the loneliness at the core of Nozomi Otoko, in that he feels like he doesn't belong in either world.
Hmm. Well, maybe if you'd stop trying to fuck people over for money, you could make some friends, dude.
And how pathetic he is to get Kitaro to come, in that he can't admit his own mistake, and so he has to pretend to be Mana.
Yeah. Also, like, he tries to win Kitaro over by nearly running him over in, like, a Lamborghini. Not the best plan, man.
And then by the end, he's then moved into Bitcoin. Sorry, BB Bitcoin.
I'm surprised they didn't save that for an episode. That joke seems so obvious.
But it's a really good episode again. And you're like, wow, this is... I like where it goes. And also, it had an eyeball washing his hair, even though he has no hair.
Yeah, he has that little thing around.
In fact, he's wearing one of those little rings to keep the shampoo from... out of his eye.
Out of his head.
Out of his fucking iris or something, I guess, but whatever. Oh, madness.
I was looking up one new door of the Yonkai about, does it have a laser beam from people in diamonds? I couldn't find it.
I knew face on a wheel. I knew face on a wheel on fire. I shoots laser beam that turns you into diamonds, or is that specifically like a comic thing?
Remember doing that in Okami, definitely.
He does it in the comic. This is another one which is in those collections.
Right.
I think Nozomi Otoko's role in the comic one is not quite so criminal as it is in this modern version of it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was... is fun the right word? First something so
kind of horrifying for a considerable portion of the episode. Yeah,
it certainly kept you watching. In the early on there, it wasn't the most spectacularly animated. Instead, a lot of the same shots for Kitaro and Ratman's falling out, like cutting back from the two shots, and then using the same reaction shot of Kitaro, like making the kind of the sour face after he's driven off in the car again. Everyone's like, okay, right, I must be doing something later on then.
Yeah, there was a bit of cheapness there. Like, there was one thing where I think his car was like on the right of the screen, and then when it flips to the left of the screen, the background is completely different. The stock street background that they're using. I was like, wait a minute, the scale and distance from everything doesn't seem... Everyone's off their mark, essentially. But yeah, you're right. They're probably just saving it up for something.
I like the intimation at the end that those three guys from the Diamond Company are going to get the shit kicked out of them by...
by a bunch of refugees off the boat, yeah. Fucking good. So. Fuck those guys. I hope they still don't have their guns, though. That's the one problem.
It is pretty great when Nozomi Otoko just rams his car into the wall to protect Kitaro.
I thought he was going to ram the guy. I wasn't sure if that was a fuck-up on his part.
Even if I miss, I'll be doing something good.
Yeah.
Does he have no powers whatsoever, whereas Kitaro has, like, a bunch?
I feel like that is the case.
Okay. I mean, like, he has the power to ram a van into something, but that's not specific, I guess.
Yeah, I don't care.
If Bruce Willis and Unbreakable, then Ratman is Samuel L. Jackson. You got none of the powers. There's got to be an opposite to balance things out.
Yeah, because Kira's got even more powers than we've seen so far in the comic.
Yeah, yeah. He's quite often the needle hair and the shoes a bunch.
Yeah, often feels like in the comic he just gets whatever power is needed for the story at the time.
Is he still magnetic, or is that like a one-off thing?
I can't remember.
He might bring it back.
he did swallow that metal coil, as long as that stays there, I guess.
He hasn't shot his fingers off yet, which is one thing I'm looking forward to.
No, he's done the finger gun.
Has he shot? No, I mean, literally his fingers have flown off his hand.
Right. Yeah,
like rocket finger.
Yes. there's more,
what does this have to do with yokai? I don't know.
There's multiple stories where his hand detaches.
Hmm.
And there's lots of hair-based things.
Yeah, well, I mean, like his hair can shoot. And also his jacket's made of hair?
Yes, yeah.
Hmm.
But sometimes his hair shoots out. I think in the Tanuki Tanuki story in the comic, he like ends up shooting all his hair out at one point.
Okay.
Also, rereading that after the cartoon, there's clearly a bit where they must have been, the editors must have been going, well, they loved that kaiju you put in the story, so at the end of the story, stick another kaiju in there. Which thankfully they didn't do in the modern adaptation,
because
it does read a little bit like the editor trying to wind out what was popular a little bit longer. What was the next week's episode?
Oh,
not sure. Hung around to see what.
I know I looked, but
yeah, no, it's gone out of my head as well. Jeez.
No, it's not there. I can't think of what it is without having booting it up and looking again.
Hmm.
It'll be a surprise then on Sunday when I watch it. Righty-ho.
It doesn't seem to involve Viva Vendetta Men anymore, so.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Anything else to add? Anything else we watched this week?
Oof.
Nope.
There's some things I'm going to look back and kind of maybe mop up on. I started Full Metal Panic, but then I heard it's run into some production troubles partway through.
Oh, okay.
So maybe production-wise, it might not be one of them. But I think narrative-wise, I still kind of want to look at it and see what it's doing.
Is there much we dropped this season? Because we could always just check in at the last episodes. Yep. I mean, like if you feel like it, I'm not saying definitely do that. I looked at many things.
You know, Matsuri, because they did.
Yeah.
They did come back to that cold open at the one, but it was all for a stupid joke. So I want to know what that stupid joke was.
Okay. Really. Okay.
Yes, we've got no more Gurus any next week. Doesn't look like there's a Lupin episode next week, and there's no Cutie Honey. So a little bit lighter next week, and then we've got Golden Kamuy ending, Space Battleship Tiramisu ending, I've got Psyche K ending, Megalobox is ending. I think that's it. Everything else is continuing.
For a little light, this means more time to talk about Megalobox ending. We just probably just do a whole show of us about that.
A retrospective, why not?
And yeah, I'm not sure. I've got things written down as possibly to watch in the summer, but nothing looks like a surefire thing, though. Of course, I'm pretty sure there's one thing I know Niall's going to want to watch.
I think I know what you mean.
Middle manager Tonigawa.
I don't care what that's about. Well, no, I know what it's about precisely, but I want to see him doing things. It probably wouldn't even be gambling things. It'd be him acting a dick to people. It's fun in its own way.
Yeah, because it seems to be mainly about him and the black. The trailer just shows a tiny bit of the animation, doesn't it? Though it does have your boy being carried along on the backs of the black suits. Yeah, maybe it'll get more sympathy for him. Maybe that's the thing.
Because we kind of feel bad for him, because after he gets beaten in Kaiji, I think he gets sent to the underground prison, even though he was like, but he was one of the top executives of the organization, and you know, he lost one gamble. One gamble lasts all it takes. You're going to the jail now. Going to gambling jail. I don't mean prison, I mean my underground labor camp where you're building something for me.
Let's just say a gold pyramid.
Righty-ho. Before we say goodbye, let's find out what's coming up on this week's Secret of the Sailor Madness and Dynamite in the Brain. Guys.
Let's see here now. Let's see what we got. We're putting together a slate of new or recently aired things that we're all going to kind of try out in the rest of the animation world. Hmm. So just trying a little bit of this and that and see if there's any one of those. Still haven't finalized that slate, but we'll get around to it. It'll be a little like this, actually, just watching a little start a new season. So it could be like got a lot of stuff there that we'll get around to. We'll see how well we do. And the idea is we might check back on these then a few weeks or a month or two later and see if they're worth maybe delving into more closely. Yes.
On Dynamite in the Brain, currently up is the Anime Dog Draft, where myself, Anthony, Niall, and Marvin pick 12 anime dogs each from the entire history of anime dogs to pit against each other at Amicon in anime dog poker. And then, despite what we say at the end of the episode, it is not Little Witch Academia next week, it is Bio Broly. And also the Dr. Slump movie and the Slam Dunk movie, which aired with it in Japanese cinemas in 1994. Because as we learnt from the second Broly movie, there is not enough movie in the Broly sequels to justify an entire podcast on their own, so therefore we had to add some more details. So we checked out Dr. Slump and Slam Dunk, two shows we have not seen enough episodes of. So did we enjoy them, or was that a hindrance? Find out by listening next week to Dynamite in the Brain. Otherwise, be back here next week for more. Let's go. Goodbye.
Boy.
Listen up.